Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome to the internet's best show about plastic surgery, health, and beauty. This is Nip Talk. Up today, we got some pretty good segments. First off, tips for getting breast augmentation. These are from questions I get a lot. This is going to be a good one. Next, we're going to do a medical topic about sleep apnea, something not everyone knows about. And then finally, I saw an article about this 18-year-old girl that has had over 100 plastic surgeries. What? Can't believe it. We're going to talk about it right now.
Live from Lincoln Center in the heart of the Dallas Metroplex, this is Nip Talk. An honest and uncensored show about plastic surgery, health, beauty, and lifestyle. With your host, plastic surgeon Dr. Bruce Herman, and your co-host, entrepreneur and social media influencer Sarah Bennett. Now it's time to discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly of the topics everyone is talking about. It's time for Nip Talk.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We really do appreciate it. I'm your host, plastic surgeon Dr. Bruce Herman, and with me is the lovely Sarah.
Hi.
Hi, Sarah. Hi. In the box, we got Trelvis.
I thought we were going to get a hi.
Hi. Hi. It's, you never know what you're going to get with Sarah.
Absolutely.
You might get a hi. You might get a hi.
I am wearing the same shirt, though.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to fib on ourselves.
Same
so
outfit.
We're not airing live today because of spring break. I am currently on, probably right at this moment, on the ski mountain. You can check my Instagram. I'll probably put some pictures up. But of course, we want to deliver this great content that you guys are used to, so we wouldn't miss an episode.
Absolutely.
And two, if you're watching this now, we do love when you comment. Unfortunately, we won't be able to respond to those today because we're not
but
actually.
But we could the next one.
But the next one we will, because we love when you guys comment on the live shows. We really do appreciate that. Thank you so much. So, yeah. So, I guess you guys aren't doing anything for spring break?
I was thinking about taking Avery to this thing that keeps being advertised to me in Waco. It's called Camp FemFo.
FemFo?
Yeah.
What is Camp FemFo?
I don't even know.
You don't know
I've
what it
never
is?
Even, I've never heard of it.
Is it like an adventure
it's like
camp?
It's like a new like resort thing that they put in Waco. It's like an outdoorsy
really?
Type resort. Yeah.
Now, you know, I used to, well, you may not. I used to live in Waco. I did my undergrad at Baylor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, back then there wasn't anything
my
out there, but that.
My dad's family is from there.
Oh, yeah?
So
when I was
there,
the only thing that was in Waco was the Branch Davidian compound. I mean,
yeah. And
like, there was not a lot out
Chip
there.
Chip and Joanna took over.
Oh, right. Chip and Joanna. I'm pretty sure they were at Baylor the
and
same time
there.
That I was. Mm-hmm. In fact, he was in one of the fraternities that we were kind of like rivals with. I'm sure I met that guy because I think we're only 1 year apart.
Yeah.
I think he's either 1 year older or 1 year younger than I am.
Yeah. Me and Avery love watching
him. Chip Gaines, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't remember him because like the Greek community was pretty close-knit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I remember a lot of the people.
Maybe he wasn't as outgoing as he is now.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Because he's a goof.
Like, oh, yeah. We may have ran in different circles. I mean, I ran in like the questionable circles. He probably was a good guy. I don't know.
Oh.
Well, you know, it was college.
Dr. Herman.
But yeah, how did we get on that? Oh, yeah, the park down there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, you have to, if you go, please tell us about it.
Yeah, I want to look more into it. It's probably too late for me to book anything, but.
You never know. I mean, check
I mean,
it out.
I have a little, my little camper on top of my
I
truck.
Know.
So I can kind of just show up.
Sometime when you go do that, I want you to take a little video, or you can pull it from one of your old videos if you have it. I want to see, like, that thing up and running.
Oh,
I've
made
seen your car,
the most,
so.
My most recent YouTube video. I probably what? Have a new one up by the time this one is going.
Uh-huh.
But the one that I made, I took Avery to Glen Rose. That one. I made a video of that.
Did you? Okay, I'll go check it out on there then. Uh-huh. I do see your videos, and I do try to watch them. I just don't know if I hit every single one.
No,
so
you're
for
good.
Those who don't know, Sarah's got this really, really cool. It's a 4Runner, right?
Yeah.
So she's got a really cool 4Runner, and it has the thing on top where it has the built-in
camp a tent
camper.
So it like kind of like it's like this and then you just unzip it and it folds out.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
An accordion.
It looks super cool, and I've always wondered about that, so I'm gonna have to go on your YouTube and check it out.
Yeah, it's fun.
I used to camp a lot when I was young because you know when you're young you don't have money, you can't go on vacation, like, you know, camping's like a great thing to go do, so my friends and I did that a lot. But then I married my wife, who absolutely hates camping. And so I pretty much haven't been camping since I've been married. Well, I take that back. I've taken the kids a couple times.
Yeah.
But I've never actually been camping.
You never been?
Mm-mm.
Dude, you should go. Let me tell you.
I'll take you.
It's fun. I mean, so like you go somewhere cool, like a lake. So there's the scenery. Mm-hmm. And then it's fun. I mean, here's what I like about it. You bring food to cook. Okay. So you're cooking outdoors over a campfire, which I really enjoy cooking. So
you can just like literally, if you just like cook bacon on an iron skillet,
yeah,
that's like
fire,
the best.
Dude, that
thing.
Is the best. She is so right. I love cooking breakfast, camp breakfast.
Yeah.
Like over an iron skillet. And then, of course, you know, you bring like your drink of choice, like beer or bourbon or whatever.
You gotta be careful though, because some parks, state parks or places, they don't let you drink.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
know. What kind of communism is that?
Yeah, they don't, or they're like, we don't want to see any, like, we don't want to see it. So it's like,
well, okay, whatever.
That kind of thing.
Some drinking state parks said I couldn't drink there. I feel like, no.
That's interesting.
Well, there's a lot of kids, you know.
Well, I'm not giving them the drinks. I mean, I'm not corrupting children.
I know. I'm not either.
But dude, seriously.
Dr. Herman is definitely taking offense to this.
I'm offended by the state park saying that we can't, you know, do our constitutional right to have an adult beverage in the state park. I mean, they're not giving it to the bears.
Ray Roberts. If you go to Ray Roberts Park.
Yeah.
I know Ray Roberts. Up north. And like their little beach area that they made.
Is there no drinking?
Yeah, you cannot drink there at all.
Maybe because of
we
litter.
We got in trouble.
Maybe because of litter?
I don't know. It's probably just from just
that
public.
Sounds like some communism.
Just
to
like
me.
Probably public indecencies and stuff like that. But like.
Well, people take it too far, right?
Yeah, they get too.
They
drunk.
Get people get smashed. I mean, don't do that or get onto those people. Don't get onto me and Sarah, who are responsible.
We went. My
drinkers,
CrossFit. Yeah,
obviously.
My CrossFit gym went there for like a summer party, like end of summer party. And all of us, of course, were out there, like, you know, with our Yetis pouring.
Yeah.
You know, whatever we had in those cups. And then a police officer goes, all right, I know that's not water in there. Dump it. Open your coolers, blah, blah, blah. And we were like, what? We don't have drugs. What's going on?
No, I've gotten in trouble before for having an open container on a boat. It wasn't in this state.
I thought you were allowed to drink on boats.
So it was in a different state.
Oh, okay.
And so it was when I was in my residency in Kentucky. I had a little, like literally, and when I say a boat is a very generous word for what I had. It was a canoe with like a electric motor. And me and my friends like went on this like creek that was probably 10 feet wide. And sure enough, some game fisherman person came by. And so in the bottom of the boat, it's like littered with beer cans.
Lord.
Because we've been out
there.
Were
y'all even fishing?
Yeah, we were fishing. Yes, we were fishing. And so he's like, have you guys been drinking? I'm like, and there's like 10, there's like 20 beer cans. Yeah. He's like, well, you know, it's against the law to have an open container on a boat in the state of Kentucky. I'm like, what? Is this Russia? Is this China? And I got a ticket for it. Yeah.
Did you just, were you just like, I'm from Texas? And they're like, I don't care.
Yeah. I was like, I'm sorry. I'm from Texas where the laws are normal and this is like unusual to me.
Did you get a ticket?
Yeah, I got a ticket.
Oh.
Yeah. It wasn't like anything bad. I just paid like, you know, you get a ticket. It's not like I don't even think it was a misdemeanor. Like,
game wardens are tricky.
Yeah, like, they carry guns too, man. Those guys are
legit.
Well,
they're very tricky. I remember going fishing and I was getting off of the boat and he just acted like a normal guy. How was fishing today? Did you catch something? And I was like, yeah, I did. He goes, let me see that license.
Oh, man.
And I was like,
jerk.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But I did have one.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny. I'm like, dang, you didn't have to be so sly.
We got off in the weeds here. Travis, go camping sometime. It is fun. You get your buddies out there. Like, and we used to do it growing up. Like, you go down to the, you know, if any of our friends' parents had, like, a lease, like a deer lease or something, mm-hmm. you go down and you camp out there. I mean, it is fun.
Absolutely.
You should try it. One time.
I put that on the list. That's on
one
the list.
One time in your life, go camping.
I got you.
So. All right, let's jump into some segments. So going from camping and drinking in state parks, we're going to dive into breast augmentations.
That's a natural transition.
It's a normal transition. No. So this is a segment that I got from people asking me questions on some of the posts we made, just about some general tips if you're thinking about getting a breast augmentation. And just to kind of mix this up, because I think I've done something similar like this in the past, maybe not exactly like this. I wanted to do this in the format of, these are questions you should ask the plastic surgeon that you go to, that you're having your consult with. And I like wrote down all these questions to kind of maximize patient information about the procedure and patient safety.
Yeah.
So, and Sarah, weigh in on any of these, because I know, I mean, you've talked about this, so I'm not putting on the spot that you have done this before and you've had the consults and stuff. Not me, but other people. So, so the first one that I would think is probably absolutely the most important, I know Sarah knows what I'm about to ask, is ask your plastic surgeon if they're board certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery, because there is a big problem in the United States with non-plastic surgeons doing breast augmentations, and without question, the outcomes are not as good. If you have a medical doctor doing breast augmentations in their office, they're not going to do as good a job as a plastic surgeon. I can tell you that 100%.
Right.
And it can be very deceiving because websites will say they're certified by the American Cosmetic Surgery Board, which is a totally fake board. It doesn't exist. I mean, it exists, but it's not considered legit. And so it can be confusing. So I think that is, number one, the most important question.
Got it.
The next one is, I think it's totally fair to ask somebody, how many breast augmentations do you do in a month?
Yeah.
I mean, and the reason I say that is because plastic surgery is very, very broad. You know, there are people out there that may only do like one breast aug every, you know, few months.
So like go to a surgeon that their specialty.
I mean, that's, I don't like want to say that because I mean, that's my specialty. And I hate to say that because I'm trying to get people to come see me. But there is some truth to the fact that plastic surgeons do tend to specialize. Some do.
Well, I mean, it's like any other surgery. You're not going to go to a foot doctor to go get your heart surgery, you know?
Right, yeah. Well, and in this instance, it's a little different because any plastic surgeon should be well-trained enough to do a good breast augmentation. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there will be a difference in outcome for somebody who does 50 in a year versus 4.
Right.
And there, that does exist. I mean, I do tons of implants. I don't know how many I even do in a year, but I mean, I do, you know, at least one a week, you know, and sometimes, you know, more, 2, 3. There are people out there that may do one every couple, 3 months. Mm. And so, you know, it's worth asking. I mean, they may say I only do one every 3 or 4 months, but you look at their results.
What's like the busy season of getting a boob job?
For me? Well, in general. So my busy times of the year are starting right now through about June.
Okay.
So like early March, April, May, into June, and then fall.
Okay.
Summer, people are traveling, the people don't get plastic surgery as much.
And they want to show.
And they want to have their body by then.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, things die off in January. This January, I was pretty busy because we had a lot of overflow from December, but historically, January is kind of slow. Yeah. So there is seasonal for plastic surgery, which is odd. The next one, so this one is one where you're kind of getting into some of the more technical, is ask your plastic surgeon what implant is right for me and why. Now, if you've done any research on breast augmentation, you will know that there are tons of implants out there. There's saline, there's silicone, there's round, there's shape, there's smooth, there's textured, there's soft gel, there's firm gel. I will tell you that in my practice, probably 95% of the time, I use smooth, round, silicone gel, high profile implants.
Okay.
That is the best for most people. And it's not, I don't use that because I'm lazy or I don't have the, I have every implant known to man at my disposal because I use so many through the company. But for most people, that is the best, but not everyone. And I just did one the other day that a girl had a very specific request, and we used an ultra high profile, slightly firmer gel implant. And for her, it was perfect. She loved it. And It did exactly what you want to do. But I think it's worth talking to the surgeon about, for what I want, what is the best implant for that?
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not willing to talk to you about that or like give you the information, go elsewhere. I mean, you know, you don't want to go to someone that's just going to be like, this is what you're going to get and you're going to like it, you know? Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So I think it's worth asking about that. Next would be, what are your thoughts on the size that I want to go to? So that's me as the person, you know, having the consult saying, what do you as a surgeon think about what I want to do?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's important. I get a lot of people coming in that want to do something that I think is probably not in their best interest. And I'm pretty open about telling them that I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah, I think I've said this before, like the surgeon I went to, granted, I was really young. So I think he was like used to hearing girls my age being like, I want this, like, you know, some, like, absurdly large size for my body type. He literally, before I could even say what size, he told me he would go no bigger than XYZ.
Oh, really?
XYZ. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if I knew that. That's actually good.
He was like, I'm just going to tell you right now, before you even say what size you want, I will not perform surgery on you if you want any
something
size
crazy
bigger than what I'm going to
And
offer.
I do the same thing. I don't, come out and say that. aggressively, or, yeah. Well, I don't know if he said it aggressively, but I don't come out and say it like you said
he couldn't
said it.
Have because he had like a little Irish accent. It was cute.
Top of the morning to you. I won't be doing them large implants.
It pretty much is like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Dr. Herman, I do have a question. So when you tell people you don't think that's a good idea, what is the percentage of people who say, I still just go ahead and do it? Or like
almost all of them. Oh, you mean that go ahead and do what they wanted to do?
Yeah, they'll go ahead and do it, or they take your advice.
Most take my advice. Mm-hmm. Some will not. And then it comes down to...
And then they have to go to a different surgeon, though.
Well, it depends. Usually. If somebody wants something that's just totally insane, I'll just say, look, I'm not going to do it. And I've had people get mad at me. Like, they say, well, you're just a bad surgeon. I'm like, whatever. Like, you can think I'm a bad surgeon and just get out of my office. I mean, you know. But I've had people get, like, angry at me. And I'm just like, look, it's all about safety. And I'm not just saying this because you have to do what I want to do. But then on the other hand, if somebody wants to do something that I don't necessarily agree with but I think is still safe, mm-hmm. I'll do it. And that usually comes down to people wanting big implants. There is a limit to what I'll do. If somebody comes in and asks for 800cc implants for cosmetic, I'm just like, absolutely not. But like, if somebody wants, say, 500, 550, which I don't necessarily recommend, and if I explain that to them, that these are the reasons I don't recommend it and these are the risks that you're going to assume by doing it, and they say, I understand that, but I still want it, I'll do it.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Well, I think if anybody has any type of empathy, they'll understand that, like, when you perform surgery on people, it's like you're putting your name
on it. No, totally.
Like, when they walk out the door, it's like you want to be proud of it. Yeah. So I feel like if anybody has any type of empathy, should understand that.
I'll be honest with you guys. I've gotten burned a time or two where somebody wanted something I didn't recommend, mm-hmm. and they said, oh, I understand the risks, and I still want to do it. And then one of the risks that I said might happen happened.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's frustrating. And everyone's been pretty cool. Like, no one's like got mad at me, you know, because, and this usually revolves around big implants, you know.
Yeah.
No one's like gotten mad at me, but it's just kind of frustrating, you know, when you're like, oh, hey, this might happen. And then it does happen. And it's like, oh.
And you have to go back and
do another. Yeah, you have to go back and do another surgery. And I generally don't charge people I pretty much never charge people. If someone has surgery with me and they go back to surgery, I don't charge them anything.
Okay.
But that takes up my time, right? You know?
Yeah.
And thankfully, it's very rare that happens. But it's kind of a bummer when it does. So asking the surgeon about the size, I think, is important. And another thing is, as a sub-note to that one, is ask the surgeon, how are you going to ensure that the size I want that I'm asking for is what you're going to do? Meaning, if Sarah comes in and says to me, Dr. Herman, I want a D cup, and I say, okay, I'm going to give you a D cup. How do we know we're on the same page with what a D cup is? Because breast cup size is arbitrary.
Yeah.
You know, if Trey and Sarah and I all had a lump of clay and we were all going to make a D-shaped breast, I guarantee you those things would look way different.
Mm. Every time I go to Victoria's Secret, they say I have bigger boobs. And they have my
That's a marketing thing.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's marketing, yeah. Well, what I mean by marketing is...
That's why I don't go
If
there.
There's multiple bra companies and a girl is a C-cup, 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 D-cup, that girl will buy that D-cup bra in Victoria's Secret every single time.
Yeah, because they want to
they
be bigger.
They want to think that they're bigger, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, right? Smart marketing. Mm. So the way I do it is I have gel sizers I use, and then I have the girl wear a special bra. They put in the gel sizers. It makes them look like they had an augmentation. And when I say, this is what I want, I measure that. And all I do is I write down the measurement. And when I go in the OR, I recreate that.
That's cool. I don't even remember if I did that or not.
Yeah.
At my place.
There are so many people I see come
to
my
office.
It was
a very long time ago.
Yeah, it's been a while. There's so many people that come to my office for visionary breast augmentation surgery that say, this is not what I asked for. It happens so much. And so I think it's really important to prevent that. And so there are ways to do it if the plastic surgeon is a good plastic surgeon. Another one to ask your surgeon is, where do you do your surgeries?
Yes.
You'd be surprised how few people ask me that. I do get it every once in a while. And it's not something I always remember to tell them. The reason that's important is there is a difference between getting plastic surgery in a surgery center that is accredited, that is licensed, that is has oversight, and doing plastic surgery in an office. And I'm not a big fan of doing plastic surgery in the office, and I will say that there are plenty of great plastic surgeons that operate out of their offices.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of bad plastic surgeons that operate out of their offices, and not as many that operate out of a surgery center because of the oversight.
Okay.
The surgery center won't allow a surgeon to do something that is clearly against the standard of care, but in an office, people can do whatever they want.
Right.
And so, you know, like I said, it's not terrible if a plastic surgeon operates out of an office. They could be excellent. but it does give a little bit of potential for downside.
Yeah, some gray area.
Yeah. Another thing that it's important to ask is, does anyone else do part of the surgery? Now, did you guys know that a lot of plastic surgeons hire a non-surgeon to do part of the surgery?
No.
Yeah, it happens quite a bit. In order to do more surgeries in a day, some plastic surgeons will hire a nurse or a first assist to do things like the closures. They wouldn't generally be doing the bulk of the surgery, but they do kind of the end parts of it. I don't do that because I'm OCD. I can't like have someone touch my work. It's like if, you know, a painter had someone come in and finish the painting. Like,
right.
Absolutely not. For me, I just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But that does happen a lot. So it's worth asking about.
Yeah. You know, I knew that they did that for like surgeries. Like from watching like surgery TV shows, they're like, all right, like the doctor's done like doing the part. And yeah, then they're like, all right, sew her up.
You're up. It's your turn.
Yeah.
Another good question is, what are the costs if I need surgery for a complication? And we were talking about that, like for me, where I don't personally charge people, but mm-hmm. then there are OR costs. So it's good to know, and hopefully, you know, complications are very rare, but it's good to know if you do have to go back to surgery, what is that going to cost you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is the surgeon going to charge you something? Is the facility going to charge you something? And that way, if it does happen, then you're not surprised. Asking about post-op instructions is always important. Hopefully they're going to tell you that ahead of time. It's just so that you're prepped for it. Really, at least for me, the two big ones are wearing a sports bra 24/7 for a month, and then also no exercise or heavy lifting for 1 to 3 months. So someone like yourself, you know, that's a big workout person, if you go get a consult and they don't mention about their post-op instructions, and then you come back, you know, a few days after your surgery, and you're like, well, can I start going back to working out?
Yeah.
And they say, oh, no, sorry, it's going to be 3 months. You may not be prep for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I definitely remember wearing a sports bra. I wore one that had like the clips in the front.
Yeah. That's the best ones because it's easy to get out of.
Yeah.
You have the right ones. Another one is, how often do you see complications with breast augmentation? I think it's totally fair to ask someone that. You know, some patients may feel like you're going to offend the doctor. I mean, if you offend the doctor by asking a question like that, then you need to get out.
Yeah.
I mean, I love when people ask questions. I mean, to me, that means that they're involved in their own care and they're better, more likely to do the things that I want them to do to get through it.
Yeah.
So I think it's totally fair to ask about complication rates. You know, they're going to say it's low, but at least ask them, like, you know, what do you see? Number one, it'll be scarring. That's the biggest risk far and away with implants. But it's good to ask about that. And they should volunteer that information to you, ideally. But
yeah.
And then probably the final one is, if a patient needs a lift, you know, to go into detail with the doctor about, do you need the lift or do you not need the lift? Because your case where you went and did it before having kids is not the norm.
Yeah.
Most augmentations are done on women after they have kids. And mm-hmm. so a lot of those women, you know, will have some sag in their breasts, and it can be very hard for the patient to know if they need a lift or not. And so you have to rely on your surgeon to give you good advice. And I've seen people get bad advice. I've seen plenty of people that needed a lift get talked into just doing implants, and then they're just not happy because, you know, the shape isn't what they want.
Right.
You know, so that's something that's worth diving into if you feel like you have any sag to your breasts. So, yeah.
Those are some good questions.
Very good questions. So I just want to recap this segment real quick. So today on the talk, we were talking about tips for having breast augmentation surgery. So I went through a lot of questions that you would be beneficial to ask your surgeon about, asking about their training, where they do their surgeries, what the specifics are for the plan for you for the surgery to get the result that you want. I do think communication is very important. And so, you know, either your surgeon tell you these things or you asking those questions is so, so important. So if you want to learn more about that, please check out our segment on tips for having breast augmentation. I think there's some great information in there.
For sure.
All right. So I'm going to do a topic, and this one may put you guys to sleep. It's a joke about the segment.
Oh, I was like, oh, no.
No, I mean, I don't know. It's one that I had somebody ask me about this the other day, and it's not necessarily a plastic surgery topic at all, but it's an interesting topic, and I bet you guys learned something. And I know you guys love learning and being smart and being the smartest person at the table talking about medical stuff, so you guys get ready. So today we are going to talk, I can see Trey smiling here. Today we're going to talk about sleep apnea. You like my AI picture?
Yeah, I was like, another AI.
Dude, I like AI pictures.
That's what I was smiling at.
Oh, you're smiling at that? Oh, okay, I thought you were laughing at me. So we're going to talk about sleep apnea. So what do you guys know about sleep apnea? Putting you on the spot. Sarah, tell me about sleep apnea. Anything.
I know it causes you to snore, and it causes you not to breathe well when you're sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And just you not to sleep smart. Well in general.
I forget what's common knowledge these days. You know, when you are a doctor or whatever it is, whatever specialty, and you forget. And I didn't think you guys know anything about sleep apnea. You guys are really smart. So yeah, good. You nailed it. All right. So we're going to go over this topic because this is one that's interesting because sometimes they call this a silent disorder because most people don't know they have sleep apnea. It's actually diagnosed or discovered by sleep partners.
Yeah. Mm.
And my wife tells me I have sleep apnea, and I believe her. I don't know if I think it's really bad, but I don't know that. I mean, how would I know it? I'm asleep. So a little bit of information about sleep.
You have to do a sleep study.
Yeah, man, you're killing it. You already know what's going to happen. All right, so 40 million Americans have at least some amount of sleep apnea. Now, the interesting part is only about 20% of those people are actually diagnosed. And we just talked about why that is. And the reason is that the symptoms occur when you're sleeping. So it's hard to know that you have it. And also the after effects are things that are very kind of general or chalked up to other issues. So even when people have it bad enough that they have the negative effects of it, they sometimes don't attribute it to sleep apnea.
Right.
And sleep apnea does have some serious health consequences. I mean, you actually can get very, I don't want to say sick, but you can have some very bad events happen if you have severe sleep apnea.
Yeah, it like can cause you to, like it makes you stop breathing for seconds at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just
you're on the right track. I'll elaborate on that, but you're right. That is one of the biggest things. So it also affects your quality of life too.
And yeah, because we'll
because you're tired. So sleep apnea is technically defined as a sleeping disorder with repeated stopping and starting of breathing. That's kind of the hallmark definition of what sleep apnea is. And there is two versions of it.
Okay.
One is way, way more common than the other. The one that's way common is called obstructive sleep apnea, where the muscles of the throat are physically blocking the airway. And I have a picture. Travis, throw up the first one. So this is normal sleep airflow for this person sleeping on their back. And you see the airflow is coming from the nose. It's coming from the mouth. It's joining up in the tracheal area and going down in the trachea, supply air to your lungs. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's normal. All right, and this is from the Mayo Clinic. I stole it from their website, but I'm giving them credit, Mayo Clinic. Thank you for this great graphic. All right, show me the next one, Travis. Yeah, so this is what happens in obstructive sleep apnea. The soft tissues of the throat collapse enough that there actually is a blockage of the airway and you can actually stop breathing entirely. Now, mm-hmm. What happens is when you stop breathing, your body starts setting off all these alarms, like your oxygen levels drop, your CO2 levels rise, and it kind of jolts you awake to restore that normal airflow. So you're not going to just suddenly die from sleep apnea. That's not where the risk is associated with that. So that's obstructive sleep apnea. The other is called central sleep apnea. This is much, much more rare. And that is where there is a miscommunication between your brain and your diaphragm, which is the muscle that is telling you to breathe. So instead of it being an obstructive issue, we call that a central issue.
Yeah.
That one's pretty rare. I haven't really ever seen anybody with that. So I want to go over some of the signs and symptoms of sleep apnea for those who think that their sleep partner might have it, or if you think you might have it. So the two big ones, loud snoring and breathing cessation in sleep, meaning stopping breathing in sleep. The problem is it's really hard for a person to know that they're doing that. You know, it's hard to know that if you're snoring at night, and it's hard to know if you're breathing stop. So a lot of times the sleep partners are the ones that that make those connections between the loud snoring and the stopping.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that the person themselves might know is gasping for air during sleep, like waking up like you're gasping. That could be from the sensation of breathing. Morning headaches. That's one. If you wake up with morning headaches. Dry mouth after sleep is a common one. Hmm. Insomnia, meaning you can't sleep at night. Like you wake up a lot at night because you're waking up because of the stopping of your breathing.
Right.
hypersomnia during the day, which is like you're really sleepy and you're falling asleep after you feel like you should have gotten a good night's sleep. Decreased concentration because of the chronic lack of sleep. And then irritability and mood swings.
Yeah.
So you can kind of diagnose that in yourself, you know, even if you live alone, like if you have some of those after effects symptoms. And then if you have some of the risk factors, which we're going to talk about now, you might be able to put two and two together and think, oh, maybe I have sleep apnea.
Or people are just like, oh, I'm depressed. No, right. You might have sleep apnea.
It could be. I mean, yes, absolutely that could happen. I'm not saying that everyone that's depressed has sleep apnea.
Yeah, I know, but a lot of those symptoms are the same symptoms of depression.
Yeah, it is true. Yeah, it could be multifactorial. So the causes and risk factors of sleep apnea. So this is how you would potentially know if you or your partner might have it. Excess weight.
Yeah.
You know, the heavier you get, the more fat tissue there is in the muscles and the airway, the throat.
It definitely makes sense because one of my relatives, they were hitting that point where they needed to do something about mm-hmm. their weight, and they started losing weight and they sleep so much better.
Yeah, totally.
Because they're not snoring and waking themselves up.
Male gender is one. Males are much more likely to have sleep apnea. Increased age.
Mm-hmm.
As you get older, you're more likely to have sleep apnea. Structural airway abnormalities. So this is one where you're not going to be able to diagnose that yourself. You can't look at your own airway and say, okay, well, my airway is more prone to have sleep apnea. But a doctor can.
Mm-hmm.
So airway abnormalities. Chronic nasal congestion. If people have a lot of obstruction.
Drainage.
Family history is one.
Okay.
You know, if you have family members that have it, then that would probably be lean more towards structural airway issues.
Okay.
Smoking and especially alcohol at night, you know, because alcohol puts you into that deeper sleep. It relaxes you. You're much more prone to have sleep apnea.
Yeah.
And then some medical conditions can do it. So if you, so if you or a partner, you or your partner think you have sleep apnea, what do you do? Well, the right thing to do is go see a doctor because
mm-hmm.
they can help you make the right diagnosis. And the way they do that is they will do a sleep assessment, ask you about your sleep history. They'll do a physical exam, and then they will do a
sleep test.
Sleep study. Yeah, you said it.
Oh.
I knew you knew it because you said it earlier.
I was like, what?
What? No, you nailed it. That's exactly right. They do a sleep study. And then if you get diagnosed with sleep apnea, it's like, okay, now what? Well, there are a few things that you can do. One would be to change any lifestyle issues you have that are causing it.
Okay.
So that would be things like, oh, well, I drink a 6-pack of beer before I go to bed. Well, okay, that's going to definitely weigh into someone having sleep apnea. If you're overweight, you know, like if this is something that's come on as you gain weight, you can lose weight. Smoking's the other one too.
Mm-hmm.
And also sleep position, people are much more prone to have sleep apnea when they're on their back.
Right.
If you sleep on your side or your stomach, because of the way the muscles fall in your throat, because when you lay on your back, like your tongue and all that kind of falls back and it's much more prone to obstruct your airway.
I feel like if somebody has like a lot of drainage, I feel mm-hmm. like that could be fixed by allergy medicines. Like going
that's
to see
a good
an
one
allergist.
Too. Yeah. And that's not even one that I thought of, but you're right. If nasal drainage from allergies is contributing, then absolutely right. You fix that, you can definitely make a difference. Because there are people out there that just have mild sleep apnea that if you fix one or two things, it probably would go away.
Yeah.
So if those things don't work, then there are oral appliances that people can wear to kind of open up the airway, which personally that would bug me. I don't like stuff on me. I have this weird kind of thing about that.
Can you have surgery to fix it?
Yes, you can. That's the last one.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead, which is totally fine. You're absolutely right. There are, if you have structural abnormalities of your airway, there are surgeries an ear, nose, and throat doctor can do to open that up.
Nice.
And improve that. So that is one of them. The one that most people do is CPAP, which I don't know if you guys ever heard that. It's a continuous positive airway pressure. And I got a picture of someone with CPAP. Trevor, show us that picture. Yeah. Now, I could never wear that thing because that just looks like a torture device. But it works very good for people who have really severe sleep apnea.
Like they've come a long way, too, because I have a relative of mine that has sleep apnea, and he has to wear like a mask.
Like a gas mask?
Yeah, like an actual, like gas with the tube and everything. Like,
yeah, they have gotten a little bit better. I don't know. I don't think I could do it. It's having something on my face while I'm trying to sleep, I think that'd be a non-starter for me.
A non-starter.
Like a freaking octopus is on my face.
Like the face hugger from Alien? Yeah. Hard pass.
Ooh.
I'll just, like, go sleep by myself. Yeah. So, So, you know, today talking about sleep apnea, it's a very common problem. About 40 million Americans have it in the United States. It is something that's hard to diagnose yourself because of the fact that the symptoms happen when you're asleep. But a lot of times a sleep partner can tell you're having it if you have loud snoring and cessation in breathing, and you have some of the after effects of that, which would be things like waking up with a headache or not being able to sleep at night, or being sleepy during the day, or being irritable. Fortunately, there are ways to diagnose this, which your doctor can do, and there are some pretty good treatments that can range from anything from lifestyle modifications to wearing an oral appliance to CPAP or even surgery. So that's kind of the recap on sleep apnea. If you want to learn more, then watch our segment on sleep apnea, and you can be an expert like Sarah and Travis, who know a lot about sleep apnea now because they are educated.
I can diagnose it at this point.
So. Yeah, dude, you could like, you tell your friends, man. Yeah. Let me tell you if you have sleep apnea.
I got you.
All right, we got one last segment today, and this one is bonkers. I'm just going to throw that out there. When I
My
read the
favorite
story,
kind.
Yeah. And where did it happen, Sarah?
Florida.
No, it didn't, but I knew you were going to say that. I didn't mean to trick you. You're right most of the time when you say Florida. No, this one is so bizarre, it actually came from overseas.
Oh, okay.
And when I read the story, I'm not even sure I really believe it, but it is a news article out there, and because of that, I thought we would weigh in. And this is about the 18-year-old girl who's had over 100 plastic surgeries.
Jeez.
What? How's that even possible? It blew my mind, and that's why I put that little exploding head thing on there, because I don't even know if I believe this one. But there was a recent article out of the South China News, I think. Throw it up there. I can't remember if I got the name of the newspaper on there. No, it was just out of the... I clipped this to make it fit. Anyway, starstruck China teenager splurges $563,000 of parents' money to have plastic surgery, and one more could kill her. This whole story is just bad. Mm-hmm. All of it. I don't like this story. So
That's a lot.
Huh?
That's definitely a lot.
It's a lot, man. So this girl started having cosmetic surgery at the age of 13, which is the first alarm bell that should go off. What kind of parent is letting their 13-year-old have cosmetic surgery? Now, if someone has something that's legit, all right, so let's say a congenital breast abnormality where they can't wear a swimsuit. Okay, fine. Or maybe they just have this nose that is just so far from normal that their friends are just ridiculing them to death. Fine. I could see that. Totally fine. Having straight up cosmetic surgery to make yourself look different when you look like a normal girl.
Oh, yeah. What was her first one?
So her first one was a double eyelid surgery. That's what I figured
because she's Asian. But that's like a normal, isn't that like a normal surgery?
I don't know the date on it. There are a lot of eyelid surgeries done on Asians, but normally it's to make them like look more American.
Yeah. Is that what she did?
I don't know. It just said double. It didn't say. It said double. I would assume probably something like
that. Well, it's really on trend for, especially if she likes anime.
Mm-hmm. Well, she looks like an anime
really
girl
big,
after the fact. Yeah.
To look at really big eyes. Yeah.
Charles, throw up the picture of this girl when she was 13. So this is before her first surgery. Looks like a normal 13-year-old girl to me. I mean, yeah. She looks completely normal. All right, now, I don't have, like, pictures along this pathway because, unfortunately, the South China News did not give me that information. but I do have a picture of her at the very end, which,
Yes. Wow,
that almost looks like it's made by AI. It doesn't look real. It looks like a porcelain doll or something.
Yeah, it looks like an anime character. Is that her now?
Allegedly.
Oh.
Yeah, that's after the 100.
Wowzers.
Yeah. I don't know. This story just seems almost unbelievable because I look at that picture and I'm like, is that really a person? I mean, I guess it could be.
I'm sure like in that picture, I'm sure that is her, but I'm sure there's some kind of like filter like causing her to look bit different.
Can your eyeballs be that big?
Yeah, I mean, I guess theoretically you could make the eyelid, like resect your eyelids a bit, but then you wouldn't be able to close
them.
But
her actual
pupils.
Eyes right. Look huge, like her pupils and like her iris.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I think that's fake.
You think
news.
It's been altered?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen some people do some pretty whack stuff with surgery. Like,
to make your eyes look that.
Well, our eyes are pretty big. Like, you can only see like a small amount of your eye. You know, your eyes. You know, like this big.
I know, but wouldn't it just be like you could see the whites around your eyes if you made your eye bigger?
I don't know. Maybe she has contacts in. I don't know. I agree with you, Sarah. That picture looks kind of fake. But, you know, the South China News is a very reputable news organization. I just can't believe that they would give us a fake picture.
That's wild.
Are you being sarcastic?
Yes.
Okay. I mean,
yeah. So,
I was like, I don't know.
All right, let's just for a minute pretend that this is real.
Okay.
I'm not sure it is. Let's pretend it's real. I hate everything about this story, from someone having 100 plastic surgeries to some parents letting their kids have, you know, these.
Well, now she's not a kid.
Well, now she's 18, but she had these surgeries. I mean, she didn't have 100 surgeries when she turned 18. Yeah. She started at 13. What kind of terrible parent does that? I hope they find this segment, and I'm telling you, bad parent. Terrible. Why would you do that? You should be arrested. That's like child abuse. I mean, I really feel strongly about this.
Absolutely.
That, you know, it'd be, like I said, it'd be one thing if your child has a congenital anomaly or some sort of variance where their friends are picking on them.
Maybe she was getting picked on for her eyes, though.
Throw that first picture up again, Travis, to that
girl. Let me go back and
I mean, but that means it's her culture. But maybe she was in America. I don't know.
No, she's in China. I don't know. To me, she looks like a normal
She looks like
girl.
A normal girl from China, right?
Yeah, South I think China. So. I mean, you're right. Sarah, if she was getting bullied because of something. I mean, to me, she looks normal, but I'm not a Chinese expert. I can't tell you if that's normal.
The only reason I know this is because one of my best friends is Chinese, and she was telling me about girls that get eyelids. They get their eyes done a lot. And then I worked with another girl that was Chinese.
Then I'm going to give her a pass on the eyelid surgery, but what are the other 99?
Yeah, that's what
I mean,
I'm
well, I know it was rhinoplasty, multiple rhinoplasties, facial reconstruction, shaving bone. I mean, okay, I'll give her a pass on the eyelids, okay? But I'm not going to give her parents a pass for the other 99 surgeries she had. And where do they come up with $500,000? They must be
like
super rich.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to be super rich.
Yeah.
$500,000 for sure. I mean, how much money would you have to have? I'm going to ask you guys this question, which is not even really what we're talking about. How much money would you have total to blow $500,000 on surgery? And it doesn't even matter what the surgery is. Like, whatever, it's a surgery where it's going to solve all your life's ills. How much money would you have to spend $500 million? Would you have to have like $20 billion, right?
Right.
I mean, no one's going to, wait, was it $500,000? Oh, it's $500,000, sorry. I said $500 million.
That's like a house.
Yeah, totally. They must be loaded. I could see, like, once again, if, like, your kid had something that was really odd and they were being bullied and you save up and you spend money. But, I mean, that's different.
Well, I mean, I think when she did that first surgery after the eyes, I think they passed that line a long time ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, my biggest gripes about this surgery, which I'm not even sure, I mean, this story, which I'm not even sure are real, is someone, first off, anyone having 100 plastic surgeries, bad. Unless you were mauled by a tiger and you had 100 reconstruction surgeries, okay, I can give you a pass on that. 100 cosmetic surgeries is wrong.
That's a
big no. That's
mental
10,
issue.
10 cosmetic surgeries is pushing it. 100 is like out of the stratosphere. That's bad. Doing it on a 13-year-old, I have like a huge issue with that. I mean, this girl is going to be messed up for life. Like, she either has body dysmorphic disorder, or this is Munchausen's by proxy, or all of it. Like, there's a lot of pathology happening with this story, and I don't even think I can talk about it anymore.
Sheesh.
I don't know. I'm on a roll today, guys. I'm sorry.
That's scary.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, there's just... I'm not even sure what there is to learn from the story, except just don't do that.
This is an episode where there's a lot of impassioned Dr. Herman.
Yeah, right. I'm on my soapbox today.
This is impassioned Dr. Herman.
I'm on my soapbox. It's good. You got to be passionate.
Absolutely.
About yeah.
Absolutely. Well,
does she have social media and stuff? Does South China allow social media?
Isn't that where TikTok came from?
I don't know. Isn't there one that's a communism? Communists?
I think
you're thinking of like North Korea, South Korea.
Yeah.
But sorry. China's communist. They're capitalist communists. They are communists, right? China's still. Did I miss like a wall coming down?
No, I think it
China's
is.
China's still communist.
I don't know.
I think it is, but yeah, I think when she was saying the North China, South China,
well,
I think it's
Korea. Oh, you're thinking of Korea, right?
Because one of them's like.
All I know is you do not want to commit a crime in North Korea. Like they don't mess around there because there was that kid that stole like a towel from a hotel and they killed him. Yeah, no, like, seriously. They put him in prison and he died when he came back.
Not the place to play around.
I'm going to hard pass on a trip to North Korea.
No.
It's interesting, I think it would be to see. Like, I'd be afraid I accidentally did something and.
I'd actually
like to go see it. No lie.
I would too, man. Trey, I'll go with you.
Those are like the places that you go to where like everything's made out of gold, but there's nobody walking. There's no citizens anywhere, and everybody's like.
The city's made out of gold, but like people are eating dirt because that's all there is to eat.
And there's nobody there.
Yeah, I think North Korea's got some issues. Absolutely. I mean, not that we don't have issues in the United States, because we do. We have our own issues, but they got some real issues, like bigger issues.
Facts. Yeah.
Sorry to dog on anyone from North Korea. I'm sure you're super nice. All right. I think we should probably just wrap this show up.
I just want to see her. I want to see her Instagram.
All right. I'll look for her Instagram. Play the music out. Sarah wants me to find her Instagram. Let's look for it. We'll see if we can find it. And we'll have that for you guys next week on Nib Talk. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Bye.